Hey, and welcome to the latest issue of the Three Old Geeks podcast. I am joined once again by the members of the Darkstone gang. First of all, the contrarian, but no longer the Ruinator, the Keeper of the Inner Sanctum, the Numbers guy, Keith of Keith's Comics. Keith, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here. Nah, I'm okay about being here, but we're going to have a good show.
There's some optimism for you.
Wow.
I want to thank people for continuing to listen. I'm amazed.
Wow.
I stopped listening to me years ago.
Wow. So have we. And, of course, the man who's always wrong with the hole in his collection, the Clown Prince of Collecting, the Pictures Guy in the Dirty Old Gig, Brian E's One. Brian, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Three good movies again this week.
Yes. Yeah, we hit the trifecta this week.
It was a good one again. Again.
All right, well, I am, of course, the world's oldest kid sidekick. I am the words guy. My name is Lance, and gentlemen, this has gone well beyond the boundaries of prudence and good taste. And welcome to another issue. Brian, do you have news for us this week?
Yes, we've got some exciting news.
What?
Yeah.
You do realize that your version of exciting and our version of exciting, or at least my version of exciting, might be slightly different.
Well, some of it's exciting, some of it's a little, there's a finality to it. So, What If Season 2 is coming.
Really?
There will only be 3 seasons of What If.
Okay.
That's it. That's as long as it's going to go.
What if there was a 4th? Never mind.
There's not going to be a 4th. That's it. Just get over it.
Oh, there! I mean, I also heard that there's a season 2 of Star Wars Visions.
Yeah. Also, Echo is coming. We didn't know. You know, one of the things. You know what? One of the things that I thought was interesting, this was Everything Always, which if you don't check him out on YouTube, check him out on YouTube. And he said there's never been a point where they've promised us the TV shows. I mean, like they gave us a timeline for the movies. But they have never given a timeline for the TV shows. They've never given anything on it, just outside of these are in production. And nothing has come from Echo outside of the star saying she can't wait for October. So that's as much as we know.
Okay.
Unless October is her birthday and she's just putting it out
there. Wedding anniversary.
Maybe. Hashtag Echo.
She's in the Halloween.
Yeah, she's going to go as Echo for Halloween. So those were exciting. Those are exciting. Little tidbits. Of course, DC is going to do DC.
Probably fuck it up.
Well, we hope not. We hope not. They have their 10-year...
That they've only given us 1 year of, but...
Yeah, we're not even there yet. So they've given us, it's like a presidential thing.
Yeah.
We're going to get that balanced budget by 2042.
What?
Fucking idiot. That's bullshit.
Wow. It's the president calling you.
Whoa.
Yeah, you just got pinged by the Secret Service there, pal.
Yeah.
Okay. So just to throw it out, of course, we did have people died this week. We lost a big one in Richard Belzer.
Yes.
Which, as funny as I thought he was, and he was funny.
He's my favorite pimp, though, in movies.
Night Shift.
Nailed it, yeah.
And I loved him in Law and Order.
Yes.
Okay. Holds the record for playing a single character on the most number of TV shows.
Because Belzer went...
He never left.
John Munch was on Homicide: Life on the Street, multiple Law and Orders... He was in the Lone Gunman. It was a comedy bit where he was John Munch. I don't want to say it was Saturday Night Live. It was something like that. But I think it was something. He played John Munch on 9 different TV shows, I think I read.
Wow. Holy shit. Also, a fellow conspiracy theorist, it appears.
Yes.
And so we're looking forward to...
Choked out by Hulk Hogan on his own talk show.
Which enabled him to buy his house in France that he died in.
Yep.
Which is great. I'd like to die in France.
Would you?
I don't know.
I'd kill myself if I were in France. But
no.
There goes the French listeners. Thanks, Keith.
They don't understand my... views in French? Oh, what? My God.
Scenic views?
Yes. There's c'est la vie.
There goes the French speaking.
There goes our Canadian listeners.
Yep.
I'm going to try to, I hope I don't pronounce this wrong, but Lihai Matsumoto, unfortunately passed. He was Captain Harlock, the Galaxy Express 999, and Star Blazers.
Yep.
Favorite of mine.
First episodic anime show that it exported to the United States.
Captain Harlock was great.
Wait, was that
I don't know that I've seen Star Blazers, but...
Yeah, but Star Blazers, when I say episodic, it was you had to watch the one previous to know what was going on. Speed Racer was not that.
No, it was. He won races, lost races.
And the ones with Racer X, you had to know. You had to watch, because if you didn't, you'd miss.
And there'd be ones where Chim Chim was in the trunk and not in the trunk.
Yes.
He'd get out of it, and you wouldn't know if he's in there or not.
And Trixie. Ooh la la, c'est la vie, c'est la guerre.
Olive Trixie. Oil's sister.
And the woman who put a lot of us through puberty, Stella Stevens, unfortunately passed. Complications from Alzheimer's. So, God bless you, Stella.
All right, so for this edition of the Three Old Geeks World Famous, and I have the data to prove it, top three list, gentlemen, with 15 minutes on the timer. Name your top three. And we had to be specific on this because the way, of course, Brian texted it was nobody could figure out what this was supposed to mean. So it is not a family program, meaning it is rated G or something like that. It is name your top three movies or TV shows where family is the central theme.
Wow, he put it so much better than you. But he's the word guy.
And go!
All right, number three for me, I'm going to Lance.
Oh, damn.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, right off, I'm going to Lance. I am going with, well, one has it right in there, and that is The Partridge Family.
I knew you were going there.
Because that, everybody hear the song that they're singing, Come On, Get Happy. But mostly, I think I love you. Then what am I so afraid of? I'm afraid that I'm not sure of.
A love there is no cure for.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, that was done in two episodes, by the way. And everybody our age remembers it. And, of course, the ultimate kid family, which is...
Brady Bunch?
Speed Racer.
Oh!
You have Pops. You have Speed.
There's Mom.
You have Racer X.
There's Mom Racer, too.
Oh, is there Mom Racer?
Yeah, she...
Yeah, Mom Racer's
there. Oh. She wore a yellow dress. I remember this.
And that's why...
That might be my favorite line in the entire fucking podcast for 3 years.
She wore a yellow dress. I remember this.
No eye patch. But
yeah. No eye patch.
Is that an
eye patch? She wasn't a janitor.
Is that an eye patch level line, Brian?
It stuck out.
I love that. And I love...
Yeah, you got Spritel and her and his brother, Chim Chim.
Yeah, and Trixie. Was Trixie a sister?
Trixie that was a girlfriend.
It was a girlfriend. Well, she was...
And Sparky wasn't a brother either. He was just... The guy worked on cars.
Oh, and then Racer X, who got sent away by Pops.
He was the brother. That is... Brian, that is... that is a fantastic one. I'm just thinking outside of the box. I never would have thought of that one in a million years.
Ah, okay. Well, that's my three. Okay. It's my third.
Yeah, I did.
Hey, Pops, don't you remember that you were a world champion pro wrestler? Oh, yes, it's all coming back to me now.
That killed one of mine. Bastard.
I just love my...
Mom Racer.
She wore a yellow dress. I remember.
Oh, my God.
You have a weird sense of humor, man.
That was fucking great. Mine is about... Two sisters who each had a family.
I know where you're going with this.
And, it's still one of the most fun shows I ever watched. Soap.
Oh! Yes absolutely. Yes. It's a fucking
ton of family.
Yes, that was one of the first shows to feature a gay character. Yes, Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal, yeah.
What's his name? Richard Mulligan.
Yeah.
He would fucking go invisible.
It had, the death
El Puerco?
Freaking, you had the baby possessed by the devil.
Yes.
You had
Bert
kidnapped by aliens.
Aliens, exactly, yep.
You had,
he was invisible after that.
You had, what was the ventriloquist dummy?
Bob and, Ted Whittle's Bob, and Bob was the dummy.
Bob was the dummy, and he treated him like his...
Bob was so much better than the other guy, yeah. So... Chuck and Bob.
Chuck and Bob.
Chuck and Bob. Chuck and Bob. Chuck
and Bob. And then there was the one... the general. Like yes, the old...
Yeah, the little kid who was getting in trouble. Yeah. And you had the... Everyone's sneaking around with someone else.
Yeah.
You had the one girl married to Dutch. I don't know, remember her name, but... I gotta watch that again. That was so much fun.
And it was only... That was just a half an hour.
Yeah, and it was like... It was like, basically, you know, they let in each one, like, last time on soap.
Complete parody of modern soap operas.
Oh, my God, it was perfect.
So, that's my number three.
That was perfect.
All right, well, my number three is the television show that considered Stinker bad language.
Wow. Is my three sons?
And that is... The Brady Bunch.
Oh.
Because I think when they were hitting one of their milestones, there was a documentary I watched about the Brady Bunch, and somebody had said something like, this was the family that you wished you had, where stinker was a bad word, and, you know, there was a housekeeper that took care of everything, and, you know, everybody was really understanding and stuff, you know, and it's like, I mean, even in the most perfect families, there's always some drama with the uncle or a brother. It was just, you know, the idea of having this family that was like quite literally for the time the perfect family in the middle of like the late 60s, early 70s when all this turbulence was going on and stuff like that. There's a sort of, it almost became like comfort food.
Yes.
So it gets a little bit deeper than the kind of light broad comedy that, you know, and not to mention you always wanted to have an adventure where like Vincent Price, like, you know, was the evil professor looking for the artifacts, and you got a taboo voodoo Buddha thing whatever, you
with
know.
With the spider. And the...
Yeah.
I just wanted to go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
An adult and you can book plane tickets now.
Marcia in a bikini. You don't get that.
Did they show Marcia in a bikini?
I think they did. I do believe they did.
Or you imagined it.
Or is that just one of those things you came up with on your own?
It could have been a masturbatory fantasy.
Well, at least you're honest about it. I'll give you that. Brian, what is your number two?
My number two. We're going to go with a movie.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. We're going to go with a movie. See if you put it together. It's Ralph Bakshi joint.
American Pop?
American Pop. Yeah, which just takes generations of a family and goes all the way through how music... They each
tied
were
everything together. Yeah.
They music tied the whole family together for generations. It was a great little, and it had the line, "I feel like an M&M." And Night Moves.
I was gonna say, isn't the modern era? Like I forget, he walks into like a record producer's office and he's like, "This is what I can do, so shove it up your ass or something." There was a great line right before he kicked into that song. I forget, but...
I forget.
But it was really cool.
But it was a rough... I mean, it's a rough movie.
Yeah.
It's not a...
It's not looking through through rose-colored glasses.
No, this is not...
No, drug addictions.
A lot of deaths.
Didn't one guy beat his wife?
This was not a good film, but it's a great film. It's a great story. And for an animated film.
Let's take Little Johnny and go see American Pop.
It's a double feature with Fritz the Cat.
Heavy metal.
Oh, I did not tell you what the double bill for Hanny Calder was. And I'm not going to do that on mic, but.
Okay.
All right.
Now, this one's going to be argued, I know, because guys never agree with me, but...
That's why you're the contrarian, Keith.
But I'm not. You guys are contrarian.
If you can tie it in, then tie it in, but if you can't, then you're just
family.
Lying.
It's about family. It's nine movies.
Is it family themed?
It's nine movies about family.
Nine movies about family.
Star Wars. It all deals with the Skywalkers and Palpatines and Obi-Wan's sister takes care of Luke, and it's all family. It's a fucked up family, but it's family. Tell me it's not.
It is. It is.
You should have seen the smoke coming out of Brian's ears as he contemplated this.
At the end, you had the grandkids going and killing one of their grandfathers.
I don't.
Grandkids of Anakin and the grandkid of Palpatine killing Palpatine.
I don't consider the sequel films to be Star Wars.
It's more of a Star Wars tangential.
It's in the title. It's not in the spirit. It's not
in the spirit. It's not in the writing.
I barely consider the first three to be Star Wars.
Oh, no. Those are good. Those have gotten good.
They've gotten good?
They've gotten good.
You're getting senile. No. All I'm hearing.
No. They've gotten good in that they set the bones of a entire world.
Oh, no, good things have come off of them, but they're still shit.
But when you watch them now, those things that have come off of them have made them more important.
No, they have not.
Yeah. Oh, no, they are. No,
there
they are
elements of it that, yes, add to the story, but there are elements of it.
No, not the first one. I'm not going with the first one. I'm not. The second one and the third one. Yeah, there's...
I can almost watch the first one before I can watch the second one. The second one, I literally fell asleep at the theater. Literally fell asleep.
If you ignore the Anakin Padma story.
Oh, if we ignore like a third of the movie, it's great.
It's perfect.
And then the droids talking.
But I would agree, yes, it is about family.
And meta-fucking-chlorines.
Metachlorine.
Shut up!
That was in the second one. That was in the first movie. That's the second movie.
We get the midi-chlorians.
All right, well.
Okay, so yeah, that's my number two.
Okay.
So
my number two is a series of three movies about family.
Oh.
Two being better than the third one.
Oh, I know what it is, obviously.
And it is the Godfather trilogy.
Yes.
He wants everything.
The first two being an allegory for American business where the older generation did things by, you know, they did things for the sake of doing things, for taking care of, you know, their family and the community. And, you know, granted, it was crime, but there was a certain, you know, a certain, I don't want to say code of ethics or whatever, but there was a certain way you did things. And then
the
generation that generation raised became the corporate sharks that kind of ignored everything that went on behind it and just did things their own way for the sake of their own power base and stuff like that. Michael Corleone versus Vito Corleone. And those two films about a single family, granted, it's melodrama, it's opera, it's literally an opera story or a Shakespeare story. It's one of the greatest things about immigration and just family in general that I think has ever been put on film.
You know what I would say in the first movie, because you have Vito and the rest of the council really against, what is it, Barzini?
Yeah.
Who wants to do that. He wants to get into narcotics, and he wants to modernize. What Michael wants to do is he wants to make it legitimate.
Right.
Yeah.
He wants to feel good about it. That's the Ben and Jerry's approach.
Yep.
We give 15 cents from every pint to plant a tree, and we feel good about what we're doing, about the millions we're making, because we're hippies. We're not supposed to have money. We're supposed to live on a commune.
Brian, what is your number one?
My number one.
Wow.
It is, it has it in the title. Right there.
Oh, it's going to be my number one, isn't it?
Mama's Family?
No.
Family.
Barely remember that.
It was
story.
My awesome mansion then. It was my.
Oh, okay, good. And that is because it really, it gave us Christy McNichol every week.
Yeah.
And I had such a crush on her.
That's
and
me too.
Meredith Baxter Burney, which I liked. But again, it was the 70s dealing with 70s problems in 70s ways.
Yes.
That, but in an hour you had it all solved.
I vaguely remember that one. I remember Christy McNichol.
He was like two.
I got to meet Christy McNichol at Comic-Con, and that was just a highlight. Nah. The same one I got to meet Leah Thompson at. So wow. I was double pumped.
Keith, what's your number one?
Leave that alone. My number one dealt with a ton of issues, too. Not in general.
Mama's Family?
No, All in the All in the Family.
All in the Family was brilliant.
Yes. First time I ever heard the word cholesterol was in All in the Family. Dealing with rape. And dealing with, you know.
Dealing with Edith's death.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Was.
That's heartbreaking.
It's, oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, just everything.
Yeah. And then the little girl in that went into the band.
Pussycat Dolls? I don't know.
No. No, it was that they was a one-hit wonder. The guy who, the New Radicals.
I got a reason to live. Okay. What's your number one?
My number one is family is where you find it and what you make out of it, and that is Boogie Nights. That is that do not just say that that is a movie about the porn industry in the 1970s. It is not. It is about finding family wherever you wherever screwed up situation you are. You can find family, no matter what, even in the porn industry in the 1970s.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Some also mentions. What about The Simpsons?
Oh,
good time. Good times. Dallas.
What was the, well, we're moving on.
Family, Jefferson.
Yeah.
Family Ties.
Family Ties was, yeah.
So.
Those are great. See, you got the, you got into the gist of it.
Yeah, I know. I was just fucking with you with the other things.
You bitch.
That was our top three favorite family-centered TV programs and movies. Let us know what yours are! All right, well, the podcast typically gets a lot worse in this segment, but, well, we cracked the top 15 of Tubi's worst movies of all time, and that is 1967's Spider Baby, directed by legendary exploitation director Jack Hill, a responsible, we've already mentioned this, he's responsible for such hits as Coffee and Foxy Brown, and starring... Starring Lon Chaney Jr., Carol Omart, Quinn Redeker, Beverly Washburn, Jill Banner. Did anybody check if this was Sid Haig's first movie?
Was this? No, I did not check.
Okay, I did not check to see.
Okay. Sid Haig is like 20 in this.
I don't think it is, but I go on.
And this absolutely 100% does not deserve to be in this spot on this list.
No, this should be a cult film, not not a bad film.
Is it typical Hollywood storytelling? Absolutely not. No. Is it a creepy, weird fucking horror movie? Yes. Yes,
but it's a great creepy fucking weird horror movie.
Yes. So you have the Merry family who suffers. They're the only people in the world that suffer from Merry syndrome, which is you devolve.
The Merry family suffer from Merry syndrome.
Maybe that's the way they named it that.
That was stretch.
And they're all stretch. They're all they devolve when they hit a certain age.
Yes.
And turn very childlike, except murderously childlike, apparently.
They're just playing spider.
Well, they're regressing.
Yeah.
To a animalistic state.
And they basically said that there's a theory that they could regress to a prenatal state or whatever.
So that's when they become cannibals.
And Lon Chaney Jr. is the caretaker for these two girls.
Mr. Bruno.
And the rest of the Merry family, realizing that they have a large estate and that the patriarch of this particular branch of the Merry family come to kind of claim and use their big city trickery to get control of this big estate and stuff like that. And it goes from there. And this had one of the creepiest, like, I mean, kids, it's easy to make kids creepy. It's even creepier when you have two grown women who are fairly attractive acting like 8-year-old girls and murderous 8-year-old girls.
And then you got Sid Haig, who's fucking fabulous as Ralph.
This is nowhere near his first.
Okay. No. I know this is this might have been the first one with him and Jack Hill, because Jack Hill put him in a whole bunch of his other movies. I mean, he's in All the Coffee. He's in Coffee. He's in Foxy Brown.
I will tell you that, I think that most actors would kill to have a resume that looks like this.
He was in Star Trek, wasn't he?
Oh, he was in Batman.
Yeah, well, no, he's
been in a ton. Yeah. Wow. Yes. I did read that Sid Haig meeting Lon Chaney, everybody was nervous. And he had to go. He didn't see him. And then he had to go to tell him to come on set. And he said, Mr. Chaney, we need to come on. And he stopped him. And he said, it's Lon. And you're Sid. And that's it. Let's go. And he said after that, it was great.
Yeah.
I just kept watching this movie going, why has nobody remade this? How could a Tim Burton not remake this? This is so his aesthetic.
You've checked and nobody's remade this?
I haven't seen. I didn't.
I could have swore that this got maybe remade. I've got the Wikipedia up here.
Let's, oh, okay. Yeah. I did not see, but...
remake.
It was... what a fun little film. It was sick as shit.
It's weird as hell. The dinner scene was like...
Oh, my God. It was a cat.
It's a cat.
Uncle Peter was just twisted.
I thought they don't eat meat. Well, Ralphie gets to eat what he catches.
Holy shit. We're going to play spider. What? Oh, my God. With the knife. The girls did an excellent job.
Yeah. Mr. Hopper.
The one gal who liked to play Spider, I was trying to remember what I recognize her from. She was the go-to 20-year-old hippie chick in all of the Dragnets.
Oh, okay.
And unfortunately, to be you, Brian, she unfortunately died at age 35 in 1980. She died in a car accident in LA.
Oh.
But, yes, the...
Oh.
No, I'm sad.
The... only movie that I can recall of recent memory that I could compare this to as far as like the creep level on this was Eraserhead. I mean, Eraserhead
was...
Yeah,
but this one made sense.
This one made sense. Yes. But like that kind of underlying dread that I got from movie was this like the same level as fucking Eraserhead.
And everything? Yeah. But I would flip-flop them. This should be a cult classic and... Eraserhead's a cult classic, but it should be on the bad film thing, too, because you're trying to figure out what the fuck's going on in that one. This one, they sort of explained it pretty well, and, yeah, it's creepy, it's weird. Let's eat some spiders. You know, it's normal shit.
Spiders don't eat spiders.
Cannibal ones do.
Yep. It was just a fun little movie. I had a lot of fun with it. Okay. Lon Chaney was great.
Lon Chaney was fantastic in this.
Yes.
What I found is in the 50s and 60s, if you have a kind of neat animated opening sequence, you're pretty much... the movie's at least going to be fun.
Yes.
There was the great opening... would you call it a song, or would you call it like a kind of a poem set to music or whatever? I think Lon Chaney did it.
It was sort of a song. It reminded me of Monster Mash almost.
Yeah.
But that was fun. I'm surprised nobody goth band did a cover of that.
Did you know they made a musical of this movie?
I'm seeing it now.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah. And Buck Owens' last recording was for the soundtrack.
You're kidding?
No.
And I'm now looking at the Wikipedia page.
At Buck Owens' recording studio. Sorry.
The theme song has been covered by at least three times by the band Phantomas. Crossover thrash band The Accused, and somebody called King Congo Powers. So,
but yeah, they. I want to see the musical now.
Yes,
and it's like 2012. It played in San Diego, so it's not that long ago.
No.
Oh my God! Now I gotta set my people to try to find this. Find this, Brian.
I thought there was like the one woman running around in her lingerie.
Yeah.
The exposing the woman's bra in the basement.
There were some
There was some schlocky,
yeah.
You know, just sexy for the sake of sexiness.
Yes,
type of thing.
There wasn't. When they say gratuitous,
yeah.
There's.
Well, you got the hard ass lady. All of a sudden, like she's like, I'm gonna try and close.
Yes, and then she gets, and then Ralphie absolutely has his way with her.
Yeah.
Obviously, and then she comes running at Ralphie.
Well, he has that like he has that childlike exuberance that women like.
That was so sick. And then she gets eaten by the cannibal people under the stairs. While they're showing the secretary's bra.
Would you mind taking her to the motel?
Would you take her to... And then they just get hammered.
Let's go drinking first, yes.
And there couldn't be a 20-minute scene of them trying to go, want to fuck on the couch? Want to fuck on the couch? Oh, my God.
So, creepy, innovative... This one in particular at this spot in the list... These guys, it makes no sense whatsoever.
No.
It makes no... Tubi, I have officially declared, Tubi just grabbed a bunch of movies that they had in their catalog and said, okay.
They picked them out of a hat.
They picked them out of a hat, and they will make a little documentary so everybody knows we got them. It's one of the Google 50 worst movies of all time.
Yeah.
This will come up.
And we'll get viewership.
Yeah.
Did we at all check the provenance of the... of the documentary that we picked.
No, I literally just watched it. I watched it and I wrote down the movies in order, which is making me think I need to go back and kind of...
We might want to take a look at it.
I watched that documentary.
Okay, so you watched it too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I watched it up to a point and then I stopped and thought, we got to do this. So I don't know that I watched it all, but I didn't check it to see that it was, you know, a Tubi... production of a Tubi film of
the president of Tubi put this together. Yeah.
All right, so...
Oh, I remember her. She, the other girl.
I think she was a Star Trek.
Elizabeth? She's a Star Trek. And now I'm looking at her going, oh, I remember her. Now I remember her.
Was she the one where they go to the planet and if you're over a certain age, you get the disease or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. Miri?
Wow.
Yeah. She's still alive.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Things imprint on me. So what do we think of... So this is becoming boring audio. What do we rate Spider Baby as far as a cult film? Or you want to...
You know what? I think it would, as a cult film. Yeah. And I would give this one 4.5 stars. As it should be. Oh, wow. As a cult film. Yeah. As a cult film.
Yes.
As a B movie. I would give it that many bees. This was fucking phenomenal.
Yeah. I've given it 5. Really enjoyed it. I watched it twice.
Oh, you're kidding. No. Okay.
It's Lon Chaney's doing a great job acting in it.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, Lon Chaney was fantastic in this.
Just seeing the beginnings of Sid Haig. I know it's not his beginnings, but...
No, it is. It really is, yeah.
And it's like, it was so... It drew me in. I didn't want to leave.
No.
I can't give it the that I gave Eraserhead, because this one actually made sense. I'm going to go.
Let's play Spider.
I'm going to go 4 stars because I thought this was one of the creepiest movies I've ever seen with, you know, the least amount of gore that I've ever seen.
There was no gore.
I know. There was one part where the guy's ear, they cut off the guy's ear or whatever.
And that was fun. But it just fell.
It was all implied. It was, but the underlying dread in this movie was just amazing.
The creepiest part to me was Victoria on Uncle Peter's lap doing that whole thing. And that was like... Okay, this is officially creepy.
Yeah.
It may not have been as creepy had they established some kind of age for them.
Yes.
Like if they were 18.
But they were acting like they're 7.
You know what? I know that, but they still have needs like Ralphie.
like Ralphie.
And obviously. Sid Haig dressed up as the schoolboy.
Oh, yes, my God.
That was fucking phenomenal. You dressed up for us, Ralphie.
The whole fucking dinner scene was just great. And then the fucking...
Well, Uncle Peter is like, oh, yeah, we'll just trim rabbit. This is great.
Yes.
I'm like, wait, you've had rabbit before? And you know how to carve a fucking cake?
All right, that was Spider or Baby. Cake. This one cat. Does cat. Not deserve to cake. Be on this list.
Cake.
Freaking awesome.
Freaking awesome.
Check it out.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
All right, so for this week's edition of Sunday Afternoon Kung Fu Theater, we watched a modern one from 2010, Reign of Assassins, co-directed by Sun Xiaopin and the legendary director John Woo, which I did not know going into this, written by Sun Xiaopin, and starring the podcast favorite Michelle Yeoh, Jung Woo-sing, Wang Jiang, Barbie Hsu, and that's weird saying that, Sean Yu, Kelly Lin, Guo Xiaodong, who's we've seen in a couple, he was one of the older guys, and Jiang Yiyan. And this, I always say that we watched the one and it was, and there was some wire fu in it, and it was kind of a modern setting. I'm like, the wire fu was kind of, when you make it a fantasy movie, the wire work works.
Yes.
You've got magic spells, you've got magic potions, you've got the mystical remains of, you know, that'll cure people. You know, if there's magic in it, then wire fu works. And that's why I really like this one.
Yes.
So you've got the story begins with the description of the Indian Buddhist monk Bodhi. His mummified remains apparently have mystical healing powers, and the Dark Stone Gang is basically after these remains, and they ambush the guy who has half of it, a minister, and his son is a warrior to himself. They kill the minister, they kill the son, and the assassin Drizzle, which is an unfortunate name.
Drizzle Drone.
Ends up with the remains and takes off with it and is remorseful for her life as an assassin and goes to a doctor who has a magic potion who changes her face to that of Michelle Yeoh, who wants to just live a normal life. She meets just as a shopkeeper. She meets and marries kind of a simple, plain, poor guy, or so you think.
Ba-ba-bum!
And, you think everything's going pretty well until the Dark Stone Gang tracks her down, and they want the remains for their own nefarious purposes, because all of the assassins all want it for a different reason. It's a great gang. They have the magician, the needle, turquoise, and then the head of the gang is the Wheel King, which I found out he was based off of one of the 12 gods of not Buddhism, but Taoism, where he's the emperor of the 10th palace of heaven, and he determines everybody's lifespan and stuff like that. I thought that was a really kind of a cool reference.
Wow.
But you come to find out that the man she married is actually the son of the minister who did not get killed.
She thought she killed him.
Yeah.
She thought she killed him, and she didn't. And
he's just been tracking her down.
That's because he's from Earth, too. His heart's on the other side.
Yes.
Ba-da-da.
Yes, he, there's...
Where did we see that? That because of the whatever happened, it changed their organs? Remember?
Well, Earth 2 was like that, too. Earth 2...
It's actually the true sentiment. It's called Sidus Inversus.
Right, but didn't... We just saw a movie not too long ago where somebody went into, like, a different dimension, and when they came back, their organs were on the other side.
The only thing that I think of in the... Is the Crisis on Two Earths animated thing where Luther came when...
And Superman looks at him and Superman looks at him and goes,
you're from a different dimension because your heart's on the wrong side.
Yeah, that's why I said Earth 2, yeah.
Oh, maybe I saw that.
Maybe you did. You probably did. Maybe,
but
I'm watching this going, this has got to be Lance's jam. It's Kung Fu and a heist. I'm like, my God, he's got to be losing.
So the two things that I kind of picked up.
was okay. One, the slam, the complete slam against Michelle Yeoh when the girl goes, could you make me look a little older? Yeah. I went, oh, fuck you.
Yeah.
But then I decided, you know what? I've watched enough of these now. I could be fucking Kickapoo, leader of the bicycle chain gang, and it would make sense somewhere in this whole little mythology. Because they just fucking, it's the weirdest shit. I am the wheel king of fucking the Darkstone gang. How many fucking gangs have we seen?
They're always it's gangs.
The Bright Gold Sheen gang.
The Gold Lame Ninja gang.
The Liquid Plumber gang. I am Mr. Green.
But yeah, you. This was just, man. This was the kung fu was great. I thought this was a great fantasy story.
Yes.
And again, when you integrate fantasy into kung fu, that makes the wire work easier to take.
Yes. Michelle Yeoh was reluctant to do this because she hadn't done a kung fu role since Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
And there were parts where you could tell there was a stunt double for her.
Yeah. And John Woo's daughter was in this. Angela Woo. She was one of the assassins in the beginning.
Wow.
And he worked for like a week and a half on her part. Because that's not nepotism at all.
And spent 2 hours on...
the rest of the film was 2 hours.
Yeah.
We'll go Darkstone Gang.
Yeah.
And Wheel King.
Wheel King. Wheel King.
Yeah, we can... Okay, now let's work, honey.
Yeah.
Just do that.
Yeah. Yeah, she played Eater Bear.
Yeah. How fun. I really liked this story. I liked the ending.
So did I.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny they got married. Something about their marriage felt off.
Yeah.
It didn't it? Did, was anybody else thinking that too?
Yeah, I was thinking he was targeting her for something.
I never picked up the targeting. I loved how she kind of kept him out of the fray in the beginning. I really enjoyed that. But then to find out who he was, and then at the end, him picking her up, and we have a long life.
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, the needle, I thought, was one of the most unique concepts.
Yes.
Where literally every movement this guy made, he'd duck his head, and a needle would fly out from behind his, like, collar. I just thought that was... Holy, who thinks of this?
And you know what?
Porcupine?
You didn't want him to die because they had given him backstory that was actually
and that was
cool.
And again, if your bad guys are interesting, that makes a good story.
Yeah.
These guys all led normal lives to a point. Then they get the fireworks signal from the Dark Stone gang, and then all of a sudden they're assassins.
Yeah.
And the guy's just, I'm drying my noodles out on the roof and because they're going to make up for a better noodle type of thing.
Yeah.
That and... I absolutely 100% did not see her husband, this kind of, sad sack guy, was the son of the and all of a sudden he pulls out the swords. And he's literally, he bought a whetstone for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, wonder what that's all about. And then he pulls out his sword and then he starts sharpening it as they're, kind of menacing him.
Yes.
That scene was
You call that a sword?
Great.
Oh, it just needs a little sharpening.
Yeah.
And he pulls and he's sharpening it while they're talking.
Fucking,
I was like, oh, this is so interesting. I did not want the needle to die. I thought that the insane turquoise was just what?
Yeah.
The nutty nympho?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Wow. And then there's a naked lady in my bed. Yeah. Everybody, there's a naked lady in my bed.
What a great... So Turquoise, gets into his bed, gets into the husband's bed naked. There's a big... And he's just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Grabs all of her clothes, runs outside. Hey, everybody, there's a crazy naked lady. Like, what a fucking great counter. What a great counter, dude.
Yes. The one time my wife goes to temple late.
Yeah.
They were all phenomenally interesting characters.
Yes.
The magician. And then you find out that
Wheel King,
he's missing some parts.
He really needs a mummy.
Yeah.
So
but I was trying to understand. Okay, so and help me because it got a little weird when he buried her. Why did he bury her? I understood why he buried her by the bridge.
Because he could always look down on her type of thing.
But she knew his secret.
She knew his secret. That's
which is I've gotten imagined emasculating in so many ways.
Well, no, and if you're that was a thing in China, like if you were like they made you a eunuch, that was you were the absolute lowest rung on the wheel king.
Yeah.
Right.
That's why if you there was a one little part where he's kind of applying his mustache.
Yes.
Yeah. When you're a eunuch, you
it's an old trope.
When you're a eunuch, you lose, and they do it when you're really young. You don't have any hair.
Right.
There's old. I don't think we've gotten to a Shaw Brothers movie where there's the eunuch is the bad guy, but the eunuchs are always like pale, bleached skin, no hair.
Okay.
It's kind of a Chinese standard character.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Because I, you know what, I remember the applied mustache. And
I didn't quite get that, but okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it was one of those things that just hit you and you go, what? And then it just went away.
On, yeah.
But the burying her alive again.
That was weird. Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if they just did that just to bring the tortoise, you know, like the tortoise powder was the, well, you, they make you think, you, everybody thinks you're dead type of thing. I didn't know if that was, I was kind of thinking like, was that just to bring the tortoise powder back into the story so you remembered from the beginning, like, oh, you know, they had this poison.
In the beginning,
It could have been, because she used it on her husband.
Yeah,
it was just a great little, weird little movie. But now that you tell me that, the burying her alive makes sense. Except, why not just kill her? Except that he loved her.
Yeah.
She was a psychotic little tart.
Yeah, definitely. This was the first one, and this was the most interesting thing to me, is so the Wheel King taught Drizzle how to be the assassin, and he's like, but I taught you 4 mistakes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was like, what? That's the definition of, I taught you everything you know, I didn't teach you everything that I know. Yeah, I thought that was fucking brilliant.
Whatever they called that. Waterfall blade.
Oh, the water-shedding blade?
Water-shedding blade.
That was the super flexible sword blade.
Yes.
And then she had, when Drizzle first escapes with the remains, she meets the Buddhist monk.
Yes.
And the Buddhist monk, you don't realize until the very end, he teaches her, these are the 4 things that you don't know.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought that was, the way that they came full circle like that, I thought that was absolutely brilliant. And again,
the second movie where we have the dead lover who had passed on the knowledge, and is talking to her as she's fighting.
Yeah.
Strange how things work out that way. But yeah, that was really cool.
Yes. And him finding out that she knew the weaknesses. Or she knew how to counter.
Yeah. And then the Wheel King has a great lesson. Like, where did you learn that? And he starts laughing and he dies. That was awesome.
And then her with the, I would endure the rain for 500 years.
Yeah.
To be the stone.
Oh, yeah. I would turn.
The stone. Yeah.
Yeah. I would turn into a bridge.
Yes. Yes.
And endure
the rain for 500 years and the sunlight for 5. As she's walking, then she falls over. And that's the... Yeah, that was a great... And then they were just going to go live a normal little life. And you knew it at the end of it.
It's all just gold bricks.
Yeah, but...
I'm like, why is she patching that hole?
But at the... I still think that they would have gone and she would have been the little shopkeeper and he would have been the little messenger guy.
Yeah,
and they would have lived their life that way with a golden palace underneath their feet, like Mafia Dons do.
And then Needle, like you were saying, like everybody was such an interesting character. Like the magician was like the older guy. Oh, I've got all these, you know, these injuries that won't heal. That's why he wanted the remains. You know, Needle was basically just in it for the money, but then he gets, you know, mortally wounded, goes back to his house, eats a bowl of noodles, and was like, the kid looked at his face like, yeah, my theory worked. And then he dies. That was just, he had a wife and a kid. You know, it's just, every single portion of this was just such a...
They all had some sort of depth to them.
Exactly. This was such a breath of fresh air to me. Like, you know, we kind of get into, like, the Shaw Brothers, and there's kind of a formula or this or that. This was just so intriguing to me. I was captivated from the opening explainer with the, you know, the remains of the Bodhi to the very end. I really liked this one.
You know, it was funny. I watched Spider Baby and thought, I would love to see the remake of this. I would love to see a Sam Raimi or a Tim Burton take this film and really just explode it. And this film I watched and I thought, oh my God, I would love to see the 12-episode miniseries of this fucking movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
As it plays, there's such a huge story here that you could just spend all kinds of time exploring. The whole Dark Stone.
The whole recap in the beginning could have been played out all the way.
Yes.
Right. So.
And the why, and who Bodhi was.
Yeah.
And why nobody figured out at the end how to put them together.
Yes.
Because the one guy was like, it's a fake.
Yeah, there was a bunch of fake.
Well, yeah, they made a fake.
This one had so much fantasy elements to it. When the Wheel King started messing with the remains, I was always like, is he going to put them back together? And are we going to get a kung fu fight with like a zombie or a mummy or something like that? I was looking for that. And I was like, I wasn't disappointed that it didn't happen, but yeah. I was kind of like, well, are we going to get like, you know, like the Mummy King or whatever, the one with Jet Li or whatever? This could have gone anywhere, and I would have been happy with it.
Oh.
But what you brought up about the Dark Stone Gang and all the different characters and how they were interesting, like, you could put that in the same, like, I always wanted to see the prequel to Aliens, where it was just that group of Colonial Marines going to deal with something. I always wanted to see the prequel to Predator, where it was Schwarzenegger's, them guys dealing with something other than the Predator, you know? Like, I wanted those guys that group of men or the group of Marines were so interesting. I wanted to see what they did before they met their ends. I could say the same thing about the Darkstone Gang.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to see the origin of the magician,
yeah.
How he became, you knew that there had to be other members of the Darkstone Gang.
Yeah.
Turquoise ended so quickly that I would have loved to have seen her.
Yeah. Like how she got all crazy and stuff like that.
Yeah. You know? That would have been, cause she killed her husband and his parents.
Yeah.
Why? And what a great little scene that was. There just was a lot that... Yeah.
That could have been done.
A lot could have been done and a lot more... And Hattie Calder, I wanted to see the sequel.
Yeah.
All of the films this week intrigued me.
To the point where you wanted to see
more. I wanted more.
In all three of the cases, that's a sign of a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted more. But this one, I wanted the series.
Yeah. You could do the 12-ish, the 12
episodes. Oh, yeah, 12 episodes.
Netflix.
And probably want season two.
Yeah.
Definitely.
They could have done it that well with all of these people. How did the Wheel King become the Wheel King?
Yeah.
As a castrada.
Eric?
But
no.
And we also talk about little things in the movies that culturally would mean something to the people watching it that we would miss because they mean nothing to us because we weren't raised that way. And the putting on the mustache would have been a clue to anybody who was Chinese
he's a eunuch. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm just going to, one of my new favorites, Five Deadly Venoms.
Yeah, me too.
I agree.
Yeah.
Totally.
Absolutely. Right. And Michelle Yeoh.
100% recommend Reign of Assassins. And Josh at work, if you listen to this, thanks for the tip-off, man. All right, so in honor of the passing of the great Raquel Welch, we decided to watch one of her films. We could have went the easy way, the geek way, and watched 1 Million Years B.C. with the Harryhausen special effects. We could have watched Fantastic Voyage. Brian, in his wisdom, said, hey, let's watch something that none of us have ever watched before. So we decided to watch a Western that she did called Hattie Calder from 1971. I don't know what the British equivalent of a spaghetti Western is, a steak and kidney pie Western, if you will.
Bangers and mash
Western.
Which...
But it was directed by Burt Kennedy with a screenplay by Burt Kennedy, David Haft, and Peter Cooper. It is stars the aforementioned fantastic Raquel Welch, Robert Culp, Ernest Borgnine, Strother, Martin, Jack Elam, Christopher Lee, and Diana Dors, which oddly enough was just mentioned on another podcast that I listened to. But yes, you have the story of a frontier woman whose husband is murdered by three bank robbers. She is raped by all three of them. And she hooks up with a bounty hunter to learn how to fire a gun in order to get her revenge. And what a fucking fantastic fucking movie. I was blown away by this movie.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought there was some weird shit.
Okay. The best way I can describe this is a late 60s spaghetti western with 1950s, with the exception of the fact that they're all rapists, bad guys. The bad guys were almost a fucking... It was like, you darn fool, and hitting each other with their hats. And it was like, the tone of the bad guys was like, what the... And then everything else was like Sergio Leone fucking, you know, gray area, fucking super, you know, anti-hero spaghetti western. It was the weirdest tone ever.
Without Sergio Leone directing it.
Yeah, the direction was not nearly as good. But
cool shots and everything, yeah.
Okay. Two of the coolest shots I have ever seen in a movie were in this movie.
Oh.
When the three brothers go to rob the bank.
Uh-huh.
And you get the bank robbery from the perspective of the inside of a double-barreled shotgun.
Yeah.
I thought that was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And then the, where Robert Culp goes to shoot Ernest Borgnine. Ernest Borgnine throws the knife and it goes, they you know, confront each other in slow motion and they show the knife flying at Robert Culp and it literally freeze frames right before it hits him in the stomach. And they kind of do it simultaneously. Fucking amazing. I've never seen that ever.
I was trying to figure out how the guy could dodge a bullet, but Robert Culp could not dodge a knife.
Well, you know what I thought was interesting?
I'm like, wait, what?
You know, first of all, he was off center, so he was not able to do that. But
he broke his own rule.
You're supposed to go sideways.
And but what I did like was that he threw the knife and moved. I went throw the knife and move, and he did.
But and Robert Culp, when he was teaching Handy Calder how to gunfight, was, you know, shoot and move and turn sideways because you're a target too.
Yeah, I love that aspect of the training montage or whatever. The whole realistic. Yeah, you face sideways because you give them less target. You got to move because you're gonna shoot back. And I like that aspect of it. Okay. I don't think I've ever seen that in anything else where they've actually give you.
Practical. I only know Robert Culp from like the couple episodes of I Spy I've seen, and fucking Greatest American Hero. I had no idea this guy could fucking act. Oh, yeah. And this guy was awesome. He was just mind-numbingly awesome in this movie. He was a Zen master. I love the fact that he wasn't your typical cowboy. He had the wire rim spectacles. Yep. He had like the Zen master tone to him and stuff like that.
I didn't recognize him to begin with until he talked.
Yeah.
I'm like, but Mr. Old Guy TV hasn't seen him in anything ever.
I know, seriously, I'm ashamed to say it. I'd never seen him in anything else besides those two television programs.
Oh. Well, we're going to have to do a little Robert Culp deep diving.
Because he was fucking fantastic in this. He was like the soft-spoken, unflappable, like, okay, yeah, this is my job.
This is a job. This is what I do, yeah. I'm not out for vengeance. This is my job.
And the one thing was... he had the pistol. He had the one pistol strapped like horizontally, like Doc Holliday style. And I'm going, he better draw that the right way, like that. And sure enough, he gets into a gunfight at the poker table, fucking kicks the table over, and that's the gun. I was like, that was just fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, this whole movie is fucking awesome.
Again, there was some weirdity to it that I thought.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. The best description I had heard of the bank robber brothers was if the Three Stooges were psychotic rapists.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Weird. It was a weird energy with those three.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, howdy do I love Strother Martin.
Yes.
Just
the best backwoods redneck scumbag in multiple roles.
Oh. Oh. What we have here is failure.
And that's
to
the thing. He's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, cool. That's all I kept hearing, but I just love him. The guys were great. Did you see any of the advertising for the movie?
No, I did not.
Okay. No. So the big movie poster was Raquel Welch sitting in a corset and long dress, like a saloon girl dress.
Yes, I'm looking at it right now.
Yes. Yeah. With the three guys, the three rapists behind her, smiling like they're all friends.
Very weird.
Yeah, and she's a whore.
Yes.
And then every other is just her in the poncho naked.
Okay. You want to talk about weirdness? I understand you wanted to get capture her sex appeal, because this was right after she became a sex symbol with 1 million BC in the poster and everything like that. There is a point in somewhere in her journey she should have gotten a shirt.
Yeah.
Because all she was wearing was the poncho with nothing underneath it.
She had pants on.
She had pants on, but she had no top on.
Right.
With the exception of the poncho.
Yeah. But like somebody said, that covered up 90% of the film's assets.
Yeah.
But she was a rape victim.
Yes.
Yeah. And they totally...
much differently in 60...
I know. Well, 71.
71.
Completely sexualized.
Yes.
I just... The dichotomy between the two was... they did give her some great lines. You know, we had a great time the last time we met. Depends on which side of the great time you were on.
Yeah, yeah.
That was...
Or when the... what was it? She said something like, first of all, I have never seen a pair of buckskin leather pants filled out any better.
Oh,
dear God. But there's a point where the sheriff kind of slaps her on the ass, and she says something like, yeah, you weren't the sheriff, I'd be calling for the sheriff right now or something.
Yes.
They gave her a couple of really good
lines. Oh, yeah, they gave her some really good lines. And I thought Raquel Welch, she was always, it was always said that she didn't have great range. And she doesn't have great range. That's not the point to her.
No.
If they'd have kept her in that kind of the angry,
made her
smart-ass hero kind of guy. Yeah.
The female man with no name type
The only person that I've seen that could pull it off better was Geena Davis in Long Kiss Goodnight. Yep. That kind of, she could have done that.
Yeah. But they weren't making movies like that.
I know. I know. It was in a 70-year career. Christopher Lee's only Western.
I saw him in the credits, I was like, oh, he's going to be he's going to be John Cleese from Silverado, like, you know, my jurisdiction. I was like, fucking, he's the gunsmith.
Oh.
And a fucking, just, dude, that guy can do, that guy's awesome.
And it's the coolest role. All he did was every now and again, he popped off a couple guns and a couple babies.
Yeah.
It was what he just kept, and he just lived on the beach in Mexico.
And fix guns for people.
Fix
and stuff
guns,
like that.
Yeah. There was a lot wrong in that scene, according to gun people. Like, you wouldn't fix the chamber, you'd fix the cylinder. Again, the cylinder versus the barrel to make sure the gun. Well, you know what? I understood why he was testing the barrel, because it was thinner.
They had to make it for, you know, it was made for a lady.
Made for a lady.
The second trigger would pull back the hammer and.
But the gun was an actual thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that two trigger system was the actual gun. That was a thing. So they got that right. But I thought the way they handled the whole thing, but I did like how it ended with her, win or lose, you lose, because you're not the same person, and she came to that realization.
Yes.
The preacher was a weird character.
Okay, that was if I had one complaint about this movie. The preacher is just, he shows up at Christopher Lee's place, he needs his gun fixed. It's the only time you see him, he rides off. At the very end, this is the one problem I had with the movie. Raquel Welch does not get hurt. To me, she did not, it was not a pure, the woman getting revenge for being raped and having her husband killed. Because the preacher, because Ernest Borgnine is the last guy left, he's about to throw the knife at her. The preacher all of a sudden mysteriously appears shoots the knife out of his hand, or shoots him to the point where he drops the knife or whatever. That, I think, detracted from
her
revenge. That a man had to get involved in order for her to get her revenge. I really had a problem with that.
You know what?
Especially it not being Robert Culp.
Well, she had to get revenge. He had to be the last to die because he also killed Robert Culp. So he killed the two men she loves.
Of course. No, and I'm not saying she does get her revenge. It just, I think it diminished it by that a man had to step in to help her get her revenge.
But I think that a man had to play a part in it in order for her to trust men again.
It shouldn't have been, then it shouldn't have been the preacher. The preacher was just such a weird addition to this. Like, I don't know if the director owed the guy a favor or something like that, but it was weird. It was like tacked on.
What is it? Placido Domingo? Placido Domingo. Played the guitar in the one part? Just sitting on the windowsill? The flamenco? Fucking huge.
And they just have him sitting in a window playing a guitar. Great scenes in Mexico, though. I really enjoyed that. That was fucking cool. I liked the scene where she takes his hand. There was really some cool stuff that they did.
Oh, no, when they were walking along the beach?
Yeah.
That was, what a beautifully shot, like at sunset, that was a beautifully shot scene.
Yes. And they did it well. I mean, they did the two silhouettes and the... Yeah, the preacher thing was weird. I like how you point out that it diminished it. I didn't even pick that up. I just I thought it was interesting that we saw two movies that had the dead lover telling them how to defeat the enemy.
Yes, and I cannot say enough about Robert Culp was just he was the after I watched this movie, I did a little reading. Tarantino loves this movie, and he said that the relationship between the bride and Pai Mei in the second movie was based pretty heavily off of this.
Yeah. You know what? It's one now where I want to see the sequel.
Yes.
Where she's older.
And she's the literally the female version of the man with no name.
Yes. Because she would just be...
sequel.
There isn't.
There isn't. Okay.
There needs to be.
We're wishing for one. Oh, right?
Okay. I want to see the older...
why the older kind of
grizzled? She's not had an easy life. She's never
the whole the proof of that when you kill a man it changes you.
Yes,
type of thing. Yeah,
yes. And really, what would be great is to have her be the gunfighter teaching the young girl, and the young girl not.
How about wrapping this around? If I could have been Sam Raimi and reshot. Quick and the Dead, Raquel Welch teaching Sharon Stone.
Yeah.
How to shoot a gun. That would have been kick ass.
Yes.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or you have her, someone seeking revenge for her killing their brothers. Her brother.
Yeah, but I would want. Oh, yeah. And not knowing.
Not knowing why, but she's the reason they're dead.
Oh, that might be kind of a cool one.
Look at all the stunt casting.
Or my paw.
My paw, yeah,
he
my
killed
paw.
My paw. Oh, there's some interesting angles. But I knew it had to be older. It had to be near the end of her life, when she's just hard drinking, grizzled.
Hard to picture a grizzled.
Never found love again.
Right,
again.
Oh, don't you start with the hillbilly shit. He was doing it all last week.
She never found love again.
All right, boys, so...
she tried and she tried.
You want to give a star rating to Hanny Calder?
You know what? For all the weirdness, I would have said it was like a 4.5 star because it was really good. But then you start knocking it back because of the weird shit that they did. You know, and I'm going to say 3.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll go 4 Blazing Guns.
Four Blazing Guns!
I really liked it. I mean, yeah, there's some weird shit, but it doesn't detract from it enough to bring it down for me.
I'm going to say I was blown away by this movie for the most part. I thought the preacher thing was weird, and I thought the Three Stooges in the Wild West kind of bits with these fucking scumbag rapists kind of detracted from it. I'm going to say 4.5 Blazing Guns on this one.
I would have liked to seen a remake of this with the rapist more reprehensible.
Yeah.
I'm also going to say, and I thought it was interesting, that you're 18 minutes into this before Raquel Welch speaks.
Yes.
That was fucking crazy. You see her after 8 minutes, but it's another 10 before she says anything. Yeah.
All right, that was a tribute to the late, great Raquel Welch. That was Hanny Calder. Give it a watch. We recommend it. Let us know what you think.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
All right, well, we've been following, and in some cases reluctantly, along with the latest Star Wars offering on the Disney app, and that is the Bad Batch. We just watched episode 10, entitled Retrieval. And this is the second half of the gang's adventure on the Monument Valley planet.
Try and get some Ipsum.
With the Ipsium mines. Somebody had stolen their ship last episode, the Marauder. They turned off the tracker, but they were able to track. And I didn't know the Gonk droid had a name. Their Gonk droid is called Gonky. Which has a certain logic to it. And they track the Marauder back to a town 100 kilometers to the east of their current location and find out that it is run by the Artful Dodger from Oliver Twist in alien form.
With a claw hand.
With a claw hand.
With a claw hand.
He looks like an armadillo. I thought that was kind of a cool design.
Yeah, it was a cool design.
It would have been cool if you curled up in the ball.
Okay, so where I'm at with this show.
Okay, Brian, you're the last one holding out hope on this.
Where are you at?
When I went to watch the shows, when I went to do my homework, I realized that A, I hadn't watched it. B, I hadn't thought of it. And C, I didn't realize it was the second half of a two-parter. That's where I'm at.
Wow, okay.
I literally turned, like, well, they're ended up in the middle. We're getting something in the middle. Oh, that's right. This is a continuation from, you know, like, I totally completely forgot about last
week. And then it was just trope-filled nothing.
It was Oliver Twist.
Yeah.
Yes. May I please have some more, sir?
Yeah.
You don't get nothing.
You don't get nothing.
Yeah, so you've got the guy controlling the IPSA mine and miners by saying that all the loads are all weak or something like that. He controls them all by the top earner gets their own portion of food.
Yes.
Instead of having to share a bowl of soup with like 20 other guys or whatever.
It wasn't even.
Wow.
You got the Mines of Moria bit with the, you know, that was actually, I thought the animation was kind of cool in that, but.
There was a lot of good things with the animation. It was well directed. They did a fine job with the voice work.
You're really digging
there were
out
voices.
Every.
The lips synced up with the voices really well.
You're really trying here, bro.
It made me smile every time she said, Dick.
She didn't save that much.
And Reeker.
Yeah. They
stripped down the Marauder really quick, though.
Oh, yeah, but they put it together pretty quick, though, too.
That's critique.
Dick. This is going nowhere. It's, there's nothing really interesting.
Let me ask you this because obviously this is not we are not the demographic for this. However, everything and from what I've seen of Rebels and from what I've seen of the Clone Wars, there's enough meat in it for Star Wars fans where there's a reason that there's a following among Star Wars fans for this. This does not seem like, with the exception of the Emperor coming in and says it's the age of the Stormtrooper or something like that, there's nothing that seems like it contributes to the greater the universe as a whole.
This is not meant to be, though. If you look at it, these characters are never mentioned from now on. They never accomplish anything that's noteworthy in the universe.
Yes, that's true.
Because their existence is. So it's not meant to lead it. They can't have a big confrontation with anyone important. It's to try to show you different aspects of the universe, as stupid as they may be. This is not meant for greater glory. This is,
except that they built up a universe that they could use many, many things from. You're talking about Grogu going and training with.
Fuck Grogu.
Take it easy. Save it for the Mandalorian.
Whoa, well, that's when we start the Mandalorian with. He's back with him. I hate that, but. Okay, Grogu, is he going to show up in this? No,
but they gave him to Luke, and they made him a big deal, and then Luke gave him back. They had Luke meet Ahsoka. They have some things happening that these guys can actually interact with, and it would be cool. They're not doing anything. They're not even telling stories that are interesting.
No, I get that. I mean, but they're not meant to do anything. That's the whole. I realize this as I'm watching. I'm like,
well,
these guys are
wrong.
Not meant,
Brian,
to do anything.
This is the timeline right before New Hope.
Yeah. Well, no, this is years before New Hope.
Okay.
Yeah, right after Order 66.
But, I mean, like, okay, Obi-Wan was post Order 66, and they did some interesting stuff with that. Like, mm-hmm. You know, you had that confrontation with Vader that nobody ever knew about. They explained the reason why Obi-Wan said that Anakin Skywalker was dead, and you know, they could do something like this. They could they could have, you know, I don't know, they could show Darth Maul getting sewn back together with the chicken legs or whatever. They could
they
have
did that in Clone Wars, right?
That's already been done.
Oh, yeah. That's already been. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm just.
No, but Darth Maul is still around.
Yeah.
Darth Maul is still around right at this point. Yeah, they could. They could get into the underworld. They kind of glossed onto it. You know, somebody was talking about how important last episode was because this is the betrayal from Sid, which was not a betrayal, and we know, I know where the Bad Batch is, but a you're on your fucking own. I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, sorry, you guys fucked up, and that's you're gonna have to eat it. And so it was a we can't count on Sid kind of thing, which may break away from Sid, but they had the opportunity to at least explore the underworld of. Star Wars.
They danced around it.
Everything they have danced around it, and it's just somebody needs to tell that story.
Yeah, yeah, and this could have been good.
This would have been the time to do it.
But. Yeah, and they instead they're telling these weak ass things that nobody really even cares about. Yeah. I don't know.
Like to me, this is a true kid show, as opposed to from what I've seen of Rebels and Clone Wars, whereas there's some more meat to it than what we're getting here.
I would feel better if they were really just trying to sell Star Wars figures.
Action figures.
Yeah. They're not even doing that. They're not even
they're
making
not
it cool
introducing
enough.
Cool enough characters to even bother.
To do that, yeah. No. Let's have the boring Sid office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Sid Cantina with the two guys playing Hollow Chess or whatever.
Yeah, that's... that'd be fun. Let's do the... I still like the doors on the mines. I still like that. I like how they have locked doors on the mines so you could go away from your mine. Because that's something that you always think is stupid. Like, okay, the guy who owns the stake in the mine goes into town.
And somebody can just go in and start digging.
Somebody can just go in and start digging.
There's at least two Perry Mason episodes with that exact premise, dude.
But not if you have the locked door.
Not if you have a locked door in the mine, though.
Yeah, and you know what the other thing is? People don't fall in. People don't fall into mines with...
You would have lost a major plot point from the Brady Bunch if domestic mines on Earth would have would have locked doors.
But what if you're in there and someone slams the door on you?
That would have been exciting.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Well, that's what happened almost. Almost in the last episode. And then all you have to do is mine some Ipsium.
And blow it up.
And blow it up. When you see the shaft of light. After nearly drowning. There's a lot you have to go through in order to get to the shaft of light. You got to earn the shaft of light.
All right, so.
How many more episodes do we got left?
Six?
I think it's 16. 13, 16?
There are a total of 16 episodes. Yeah. This runs till the end of March.
Numbers guy, out.
Fuck. Okay. Well, we're into it. You know what? We're more than halfway done. Shit. I'll fucking finish it. You only got six.
Finish it.
There's six episodes. Like, they're going to do anything interesting in six episodes. They haven't done anything interesting in 10.
They're doing the very last... The season finale is the two-parter on the 29th. So maybe they'll do something okay.
Oh, this could be amazing.
I don't know.
Thanks, Filoni.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the season 4 or 3 comes
along. And now he's contacting you.
Yeah, no. Dude, you're getting pinged all over the place. What the hell?
Seriously.
All right, well, this one's starting to become a struggle, gang. You can find the bright side of it. Let us know. Dude, where's your phone?
The Three Old Geeks are now on YouTube. Check us out there and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. If you can't find us, stop by our Facebook page to get a link. And while you're there, drop us a line and let us know what you think of the podcast. Tune in next week, same geek time, on all your favorite apps for all new, all different material. Thanks a lot for listening, and hey, keep on geeking on.